Okay, good morning, everybody, and as always, we welcome everyone, and thank everyone for joining us in this shiur of learning. The topic of this week's shiur is something which is found in yesterday's parsha, and that is the inyan of flattery, the inyan of chanifa, and when it is permitted and when it is not. We find the pasuk in yesterday's parsha, in Perek Lamed Gimel, pasuk Tes, it says, "Vayomer Yaakov," that when Yaakov was confronted by Esav, and he gave him the gifts, that he said, Esav initially did not want to accept the gifts. Yaakov said, "Im no matzasi chen beinecha, if I find favor in your eyes, v'lokachta minchasi miyadi, please accept my gift. Ki al kein ra'isi panecha, because I have seen your face, kiros pinei Elokim, that seeing your face is like seeing the face of an angel." This is the way the Chazal interpret the word Elokim in this pasuk, a divine being. That seeing you is like seeing an angel. Vatirtzeni, and thus you should be appeased by what I am giving you. So Yaakov here referred to Esav as the face of an angel. I don't think any one of us would have necessarily made that association, that Esav is the face of an angel. But this is what Yaakov Avinu said. So if we look in the Gemara, we find that the Gemara Masechta Sota, this would actually be on the second page, on source number 3, a little different system here this week. Okay, source number 3, so if you look at the Gemara in Sota, the Gemara says, we can refer to this Gemara probably more than once, but the Gemara states, almost halfway down, the Gemara says, Darash Rabbi Yehuda bar Marava said, Bitamer of Shimon ben Pazi, Mutar lahachnif l'rashoyim ba'olam hazeh, that it is permissible to flatter the wicked in this world. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk, and then the second pasuk quoted here is Rav Shimon ben Lakish Amar Mehocha Kiros Pinei Elokim Vatirtzeni, that Yaakov said to Esav that seeing you is like seeing the face of an angel. From this we derive that it is permissible to flatter a person in this world, even a Rasha. Now, obviously, this is something which comes up a lot. And the exact parameters of this halacha need to be clarified, because generally speaking, flattery is held to be a terrible thing. A flattery meaning to flatter a person who doesn't deserve it, and particularly to go to a person who's doing the wrong thing and say to them that, oh, you're so wonderful, you're absolutely doing the right thing, is considered something that's totally unacceptable. So I'd like to discuss when it is permitted and when it is not. Yes? Well, yeah, it's Gnevus Das, but we'll see it's even worse than Gnevus Das, because greater harm can come from this than from Gnevus Das, as we will soon see. So if we turn back, the beginning of this discussion has to center around the Mishnah that we find in the Masechta Sota, which is actually on the preceding daf of the Gemara, and daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. And the Mishnah here tells us an incident which took place in Jewish history, a well-known incident, and that is the Mishnah describes the mitzvah of Hakel. The mitzvah of Hakel is that on the Sukkot, which immediately follows the Shemitah year, so there is a special mitzvah that the king takes out the Sefer Torah on the Chol HaMoed of Sukkot. And the first night of Chol HaMoed, the king would go into the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, and they would give him a Sefer Torah, and he would read from selected sections of Sefer Devarim. And this is a special mitzvah in the Torah, which takes place once every 7 years. It takes place in the Sukkot that immediately follows the Shemitah year. So the Mishnah relates the following incident which took place. Okay, if you look here at the Mishnah, 5 lines down from the beginning of the Mishnah, it says as follows: Agrippa Hamelech. Now, Agrippa Hamelech in English, the King Agrippa, who was, I believe, the at the very end of the Hashmonean, the end of the Hasmonean dynasty, and right before the period of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So this was a king. No, I'm not right. Go ahead, Fred. He was a descendant of Herod, who claimed the legacy. Okay, correct. He was Agrippa. Well, there is actually different interpretations in the Rishonim of what exactly his status was. This is a big machlokas, Rashi and Tosus on the page, and in other places also, that we'll see in a second. But he was at the end of the line, so to speak, right before the Churban of the Beit HaMikdash, and he was the Jewish king. He was in the good graces of the Roman government, who had a lot to do with his appointment as the king. But he was not fully qualified to be the king. Why that is a subject of dispute. His exact yichus is debated. Rashi on the Mishnah says that Agrippa HaMelech was the daughter. I'm sorry, it's not printed here on the handout. But Rashi says that Agrippa was the son of a Jewish woman, but his father was an Eved. His father was from the lineage of Avadim Kenanim, and thus he was not qualified to be the Melech, even though he was a Jew, but he was not qualified to be the king. Others have different interpretations. Some even want to say that he wasn't Jewish. But the fact is that he was, by all accounts, not worthy of, he did not possess the lineage that would have made him worthy of being the Melech Yisrael. But nevertheless, because of the fact that, because of political reasons, he became the king. And he was benign. He was a person who got along with the leadership of the Jewish people, including the rabbis. And it says that he wanted to participate in this mitzvah of Hakel. So he went into the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash in the appropriate year, and he received the Sefer Torah, the Korah Omeid. And he, not only did he receive the Sefer Torah, but he read from the Torah standing, b'shikhu chachamim, and he was praised for doing this, because as the Gemara tells us, only kings from the Davidic dynasty, only kings from the Malchus Beis David were allowed to sit in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Everyone else had to stand. And he, realizing his place, recognizing who he was, so he read from the Torah standing. So the Pasuk says, when he reached the pasuk, which says the pasuk in Sefer Dvarim, which says that you're supposed to the mitzvah of appointing a king, and it says you are not allowed to place upon yourself an ish nachri, a foreigner. So zolgu einav demo. So he began to cry. He began to cry because he realized that he did not fit the mold. Because however you explain it, whether you say it's because he wasn't Jewish on both sides, or he wasn't Jewish at all, whatever it may be, but he recognized that he is not what the king is supposed to be. So it says in the Mishnah that he began to cry, at which point, Amru Lo, at which point the rabbi said to him, Al Tisyari, not just the rabbis, but those who were congregated there, said to him, Al Tisyari Agrippas, do not fear, do not feel bad about this pasuk. Why? Because Achinuata, you are, in fact, our brother. The pasuk says, Mikarav Achecha, that the king has to be taken from amongst your brother, from amongst your brethren, and Agrippa said, and Agrippa felt bad about this, and the rabbi said to him, no problem, you are our brother. So this would be an apparent flattery, because they're giving him accolades that he does not deserve. Yes.
So you know that there were two Agrippas. This is Agrippa's second.
Okay.
The first was not.
Fine. Okay. This is the one I believe right before the Churban. Is that correct? Okay. So the Gemara tells us now, if we flip over back to source number 3, okay, so it says, the Gemara tells us at the beginning of this Gemara, Tana Mishmei de Rav Nosson, right? So it says, it was said over in the name of Rav Nosson, that Ba'osa Shah, that at that time, that Agrippa was praised and told, Achinuata, Nischaivu Sone Yisrael Kulia. The Jewish people, this is a euphemism, the Gemara uses a euphemism when it speaks about, sometimes speaks about tragedies that would take place to the Jewish people. So the Gemara refers to them as Sone Yisrael, even though it's referring to the Jews themselves. Says the Gemara, Nischaivu Sone Yisrael Kulia Shehechanifu Lola Gripas. That because of the fact that they flattered him by saying something which was not true and a praise that he did not deserve, so therefore the Jewish people were, it was decreed upon them that there should be some sort of destruction, some sort of calamity. And the Gemara proceeds to say later on that day, it's actually quoted not here, but it's brought in the Yerushalmi, Tosfos on the side of the page, which is not on the handout, but Tosfos says that on that day many Jews were killed. Unclear exactly what happened. It could be there was some incident that took place with the Roman authorities, but there was some tragedy that took place on that day that many Jews were killed, and that was because of the fact, says the Gemara, that he was flattered in a way that he did not deserve, because here he felt bad that he was not worthy of being the king. And instead of just simply remaining silent, the people, the chorus came up from those assembled, Achinu Ata, you're our brother, don't worry about it, you're a good guy, you're a good man. Right? Why were they saying this? So clearly they were saying this because they wanted to be in good standing with him. And because of this, says the Gemara, this was an avla, this was the wrong thing to say, and therefore a tragedy took place in the Klal Yisrael on that day. Yeah, I'm sorry, should I have
that? Yeah.
It seems like it was on that very day. It seems like it was on that very day. That's the Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi that Harbe Chawolad Nafu Ba'Oso Hayom Shechnifu, that on that very day that they flattered him, there were many deaths amongst the Jewish people. So the question now presents itself: so how do we reconcile all of? How do we reconcile this? In other words, here, this is the primary source in the Gemara for the danger of Chanifa and how it is such an inappropriate thing to do. So, where do we go with this? Furthermore, the Gemara says that it's still here on this very page. Okay, the Gemara continues about four lines from the beginning of the quote. The Gemara says, Amr Shimon Chalafta, Miyom Shegavar Agrufa Shel Chanufa, says the Gemara, from the day that the Chanifa began to spread amongst the Jewish people, that this inyan of flattery, of false flattery, spread amongst the Jewish people. The Gemara here makes a play on word, Agrufa is a play on the word Agripas, right, that Agrufa is the fist of flattery began to spread. So Nis'avsu Hadinim, says the Gemara, that at this point everything went haywire. Nis'avsu Hadinim means that the judges, the Dayanim, began to become corrupt because they would flatter people when somebody would come in for a Din Torah. So all of a sudden now the culture changed. The culture changed. That when a person would come in for a Din Torah, and we know that there's a basic premise in all in justice in Dinei Torah that lo saguru mipnei ish, lo sakiru panim b'mishpat, you're not supposed to play favorites. But nevertheless, when this happened, when once it started that the Chanifa began to spread amongst the Jewish people, so now people would come in for a Din Torah, and all of a sudden the justice was perverted because the judges would start to play favorites. Not only that, v'niskalklu hamaisim, says the Gemara, that people's actions became corrupted. And Rashi explains the reason for that is because now nobody knew what was the right thing and what was the wrong thing. The lines of propriety became blurred because people would do the wrong thing and would receive praise for doing it. So other than they wouldn't be called out. They would just be, you know, given the same honor as always. Nobody said, hey, that's not right. How could you do such a thing? And that trickled down to the general population because people said it, that now already there's no, you know, hey, everybody gets praised. The bad guys get praised also. The bad people get honored too. So Niskalku Hamaisin, and says the Gemara, Ve'ein Odom Yochel Omer L'Chavero, Ma'asai Gedolim Ma'asecha, and nobody was any longer able to say that what I'm doing is better than what you're doing, meaning that Rashi explains, a person could not go over to somebody who was doing an Avera, right, and feel that, hey, I'm at least better than him because I'm, you know, as much as it may be tempting to sin, but at least I have the feeling that I'm doing the right thing. But no longer was that feeling there because the people who were sinning were being praised. And therefore it became difficult. The pride that often lied within a person doing the right thing was wiped away because, you know, here I'm doing the right thing and I may even be looked down upon for doing the right thing and people are doing the wrong thing and they're being heavily praised. This is the Gemara that we have. This is the basic Gemara that we have in Maseches Sota. Now, so what we see from this Gemara, and again, what I'd like to try to do here is to try to clarify, different categories in this inyan. So what we see here from this Gemara is the evil that lies within Chanifa. In other words, it's not just a question of deception per se. It's not just that when you are flattering somebody, so you're saying something which isn't so. But the fact of the matter is that you could be distorting the MS in such a way that it's causing corruption in the world. Right? So we have here, if you turn over to source number 4, so Rabbeinu Yonah in the Sefer Shaarei Tshuva says that when he discusses at great length, and actually one can look there, you'll see he breaks it down into 9 categories of Chanifa, beginning from the worst and ending at the least. And he says that the dangers of Chanifa are, he says, if you go down to, he says, Achelach Harishon from the second line, Hachanef Asher Hikiro Ro Yoda Ki Eshavu Kachadero, a person who knows or sees that his friend has done something wrong, but he has it betarmis, and that he's doing inappropriate things, Oki Yechaka Ish Leish Velashon Hara Obanaz Dvarim, or that he sees that someone says Lashon Hara or says something nasty to somebody else, the Yachlik Lo Lashon Hara Leimar Lo Pa'alta Oven. And he goes over to that person and says, no, you didn't say anything wrong. Sometimes the person will say, you know, people, we all by nature like to be validated. So a person will do something wrong and sometimes may have some feeling inside that he did the wrong thing. So he will go over to others and say, so tell me, did I do the right thing or the wrong thing? And a chanifa would be to say to that person, oh, 100%, you did the right thing. Wait, low pile to oven, you just said vile lashon hara about somebody. Hey, that was the right thing. That was absolutely the thing to do in this situation. Why is this bad? Says the Shaarei Tshuva, because hama'at mimenu avon hanimna min ha'tochacha. He says, first of all, because there is a mitzvah in the Torah that you have to give tochacha, that you have to rebuke a person who's doing the wrong thing. That's part of the mutual responsibility that Jews have to each other. Kol Yisrael, Arevim, Zelazah, each Jew is responsible for the next. So therefore, if someone does the wrong thing, he's supposed to point it out to them. Much in the same way that someone we care about, if a person sees their child doing something, you know, that's inappropriate, so we would say to them, we care, we say, you know, listen, that's not the right thing. Obviously, there is an art to tochacha, which is a different discussion, we once spoke about this, but the point is that there is an inyan that somebody has to say the tochacha. Okay, number one. So first of all, says Rabbeinu Yonah, that by flattering in this situation, you are not fulfilling the obligation of tochacha, but he says, worse than this, he says, "V'yosef lachta amro lo chatasa." But not only that, but the person is going to continue to sin because of the fact that you have told him he's not doing anything wrong, and therefore you have given him chizuk. Kinyan shenemar v'chizku yidei mereim. Okay, that you have gone ahead and strengthened the hand of a person doing the wrong thing. So therefore, this is why the Gemara tells us this is the the great injustice, the great misdeed that takes place when Chanifa happens. Because of the fact that, first of all, you're not setting the person straight. And not only that, but you're encouraging the person. You're saying, yeah, you did the right thing, so do it again. Had you not said anything, so even though you would not have fulfilled the first requirement, you would not have rebuked the person, so that part would not have been correct. However, at the least, you would not have strengthened him. You wouldn't have told him, you know, so the person would say, so what do you think? Did I do the right thing? And you don't feel you have the ability to say that it was wrong, for whatever reason. But even if you would remain silent in a situation like that, he cannot take it as a validation because you remain silent. But if you say, hey, that was terrific, so then you strengthened him, then he's going to keep doing it. So this is the dual avwa that takes place in Chanifa. And then he proceeds to mention that there's no MS, it's a violation of the concept of MS, and so on and so forth. Yes?
Thank you. In a case where you want to rebuke a person and you know he's going to hate you for it, do you walk away?
If you know, so that's a situation with when it comes to tochacha. If there are a lot of, you may recall a couple of years ago we spoke about this. You know, the idea of what giving tochacha to a person who isn't going to listen and so forth. So that's a tricky subject in its own right. But which really, I'd rather not the ins and outs of that. That's a whole discussion in Shulchan Aruch. But I'd rather not get involved with that per se. But suffice it to say that to go ahead and flatter the person, in other words, to say to Agrippas, Achinu Ata, you know, so what are you telling him? You're telling him he's doing the right thing? It's not the right thing. So don't say anything. In other words, what should have transpired, they should have just remained silent. It might have been uncomfortable to go against the king. It's hard for us to visualize. We don't live in a monarchy, so the respect and the reverence that is involved with Malchus, we don't really know from here. So it's hard to know exactly, hard to put ourselves in their shoes. However, to go ahead and say the wrong thing, that falls into this category of what we're being told here. Ben Yom, if you read the rest of it, he actually says, he speaks about the fact that the person will repeat this and who knows what will come. Okay, so these are so far several sources that we have when it comes to Chanifa. With that in mind, we come to a remarkable Gemara in Maseches Nedarim, which says the following. If you turn, this is source number 5. The Gemara Maseches Nedarim, and Daf Beis Amud Aleph, tells us a remarkable story. And the Gemara says, Ula, one of the rabbis of the Amoraim, Talmudic period, Ula, the Miske La'arad Yisrael. The Gemara tells us in several places that Ula was, he lived in Eretz Yisrael. However, he would travel to Bavel very often. The two centers of learning were in Bavel and in Eretz Yisrael, and they, in order that there should be communication between them, so they would travel. There was travel that took place. We find very often in the Gemara stories of this person he went to Eretz Yisrael, and this person went to Bavel, etc. So Ula was someone who did quite a bit of traveling. And one time, he was returning from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and to make this trip, it wasn't such a simple matter, you can just hop on a plane. So, Islavule train b'nei chozoi b'hadeh. The Gemara says that there were two Jews who lived in Bei Chozoi, which apparently was a place in Bavel, and they decided that they were going to accompany him. They were also going to Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says that as they were traveling, Chamchad, Shachte Lechavre, says the Gemara, one of these Jews got up and murdered the other one. In other words, it was Ula, and we'll just give him names, Ula, Reuven, and Shimon. And in the middle of the trip, Reuven and Shimon got into some sort of dispute. The Gemara doesn't give us all the details here, but we could just imagine. They got into some sort of dispute, right? Where is the falafel better, in Eretz Yisrael or in Bavel, or some other meaningful dispute. And one, Reuven got up and murdered Shimon. He murdered him. But then, says the Gemara, so now Ula is there, And one can imagine feeling very uncomfortable at that moment and not exactly the safest person, right? There was no there was no police around to govern over the situation. So this murderer, Reuven, who killed Shimon, Amalei Lula, so he turned to Ula and he said, Yeyus Avdi. He said, so, what do you think? Did I do the right thing? Did I do the right thing? What do you give me? What's your opinion on it? So Ula, well, we'll see in a minute. So Ula, in this situation, Amalei Ish. Ula said, absolutely, you did the right thing. You did the right thing. I would stand up for my beliefs, and therefore, just like you did, and therefore, you did the right thing. And not only that, uparalei beis hashchita. And not only that, but Ula pointed out and said that the person who you just killed, he's dying a slow death. Why don't you go slit his neck? Why don't you go slit his neck? This is what he told him. Says the Gemara, ki asul kameder of Yochanan. So Ula finally arrived in Eretz Yisrael safely and managed to separate himself from this murderer. So he arrived at Rabbi Yochanan, who was the preeminent authority of Halacha living in Eretz Yisrael at the time. Amalei, so Ula said, Dilma chas v'sholom achziki yidei ovrei avera. So Ula said, so I fear that I did the wrong thing, that I gave strength to a person who's a sinner. Amalei, to which he was told, to which Rabbi Yochanan said to him, Nafshach yitzalta. Rabbi Yochanan said to him, no, that was okay what you did, because Nafshach yitzalta, because by doing that, you saved your own life. By doing that, you saved your own life. And the way the Mefarshim explained this, and this is brought in the Poskim, that the as far as what he said, why don't you slit the man's neck? So he said that because the person was dead anyway. There was no way that this person would recover. Ula was attempting to save this person from the painful, prolonged agony. So therefore he said, why don't you just slit his neck? Which the murderer perceived to be an endorsement of what he was doing. But the reason why he said it was because of the fact that he was ultimately trying to save his own life. There was nothing that could have been done to save the person who had been attacked. And therefore, Ula, to the contrary, said, why don't you just finish him off, in his own mind, thinking that therefore he will no longer suffer. But remains the issue, the question will still be asked, but even if you can't bring this person back to life, but after all, you're telling the man who's the murderer that he did the right thing, he may go murder other people. So to that, Rabbi Yochanan said, Nafshach yitzalta. Rabbi Yochanan said that if that was done because it was a sakonis nefashis, it was to save your own life, that you could do. This is the third and pretty much final source that we find in the Gemara for the inyan of Chanifa. So it happens to be that here on this Gemara there is just starting from, I guess, the easiest situation, working backwards. So starting from such a scenario, in this case itself is also subject to a difference of opinion amongst the Poskim. The Tosus on the page, Tosus in the Gemara in Sota says that this is in fact the halacha, that if it's a question of absolute pikuach nefesh, if it's going to save a person's life, then it is no different than the other mitzvahs in the Torah, barring the big three, right? It's no different that a person is allowed to violate, a person can transgress the mitzvahs in the Torah in order not to have to give up his life, and therefore this would fall into that category. However, this is not the unanimous opinion of Rabbeinu Yonah, and the Shaar HaTshuva does not agree, and he says that the story of Agrippus, in his view, contradicts this, because the story of Agrippus, they were also putting themselves, Rabbeinu Yonah says, that in his opinion, they were also putting themselves, they would have been putting themselves in danger had they said to him, you are not our brother, and yet they were criticized for not saying so. So on this point, there is a dispute. There is a dispute whether or not it is permissible to do such a thing in a situation of atzalas nefashos. It's very fascinating that one could ask the question, that you could ask this question on the dissenting opinion, but you could also really ask it on the Gemara itself, that Rabbi Yochanan, you know, what was the whole question that Ula had? Ula asked Rabbi Yochanan, did I do the wrong thing? So one may ask, well, of course he didn't do the wrong thing. After all, we know that all the mitzvahs in the Torah are yavar v'al yehareg, that all the mitzvahs in the Torah, a person is supposed to give up his life, is supposed to transgress rather than give up his life, except for the three cardinal sins. This is not one of them. So therefore, why isn't it pashut? Why isn't it simple that in such a situation a person would be allowed to flatter? And what's fascinating here is there's a fascinating shuvah of Moshe Feinstein on this point, which is found in the second volume in Aruch Chaim, where he says a remarkable thing. He says, and he uses this to give a certain clarity to the whole sugya, which I'm going to refer to at the end of this year, and that is that he says that there is an issue here in Chanifa, aside from the fact that you are flattering the person and strengthening the person and not rebuking the person, but there is also something taking place here called Ziyuf HaTorah. Ziyuf HaTorah means the falsification of the Torah. And to falsify the Torah, for a person to go out and claim that the Torah says things which it does not say, and distort halacha, there are opinions in the poskim, the very fascinating opinion of the Marshal and the Amshel Shlomo Maseches Brachot, the fifth paragraph of Maseches Bava Kamma, that he claims that, and others say this as well, that Ziyuf HaTorah is also Yehareg Kol Yavra, that to falsify, to publicly falsify the Torah, or even not publicly, but to go ahead and misrepresent what the Torah says in the face of pressure is, in his opinion, Yehareg Kol Yavra, a person not allowed to do that. There is no heter for such a thing. Certain situations demand that someone could try to look for heterim, that you could try to look for a way to get around halacha, you know, meaning that not to get around literally, but that the halacha may be flexible in this area. But to go ahead and just falsify the Torah and say, no, it's all right, it's okay to do this, which may be implicit in certain situations of Chanifa, so that there are many poskim that say that that is in itself something for which a person would have to give up his life. Something for which a person would have to give up his life. Of course, he laughs that if that's the case, so then what did Rabbi Yochanan say back to him? Then it should have remained that it was Yehareg Bal Yavra. So Rav Moshe discusses this at length. But the fact is that this is perhaps another issue which comes up in the Inyan of Chanifa. So now, now that we've gone through the sources, to try to bring things closer to home. Okay, so taking all these Gemaras and putting them in perspective. Okay, so we have the Gemara of Agrippas that they were criticized for not calling him out. They were criticized for agreeing with him and for supporting him and saying Achinu Atu. We have the Gemara which says that from the time Chanifa began to spread, all kinds of distortion came to Klal Yisrael. And we have the Gemara here in the Dorim which says that that Ula was allowed to save his own life and was allowed to do Chanifa because it involved saving his own life. And then, of course, we have finally the situation with Yaakov and Esau, where Yaakov said to Esau that when I look at your face, it's like looking at the face of an angel, which would seem to be clearly, the Gemara says, clearly Chanifa. And yet the Gemara that we read earlier prefaced itself by saying that it is mutter to flatter a Rasha in this world. So how does all of this shake down? So what, taking it from the case of Ula, as I say, that case is Tosfos here, the Tosfos in the Gemara Masechta Sota Paskins, the halacha that is like the Pesach of Rabbi Yochanan, that in fact it would be permissible for a person if it was a life-threatening situation. If a person's own life was in danger, Tosfos says that it would be permissible for a person to do Chanifa if it meant saving his own life. However, as I mentioned, we find in the Shari Tshuva that this point is disputed because it says, Chayav Adam Wimsar Atzmo L'Sakana, that a person is obligated to put himself into a Sakana. So if it came down to this, it is not 100% clear what the right thing to do is. However, fortunately for us, this is not the common situation. The more common case that comes up would be Chanifa that we find, especially in our times, We have many Jews with the great assimilation that has taken place in the Western world, and certainly in America. So we have many times where you have Jews who may be well-meaning people, but they're not observant of halacha. For example, you could have a situation where you have a Jew who's married to a Gentile woman, and he may be a good person. Other than that, he's a good, fine, well-meaning person. And the question comes up, can that person be given honor? Right? Especially in the world of fundraising for Jewish institutions, this is an issue which looms large, because a lot of times you solicit contributions and it may mean having to give the person great honor. You know, sometimes the person would be, you know, awarded at some ceremony or at perhaps a dinner or whatever it may be, that and now the question comes up, are you allowed to do this? The person does not keep the halacha. The person does not keep the halacha. Would this fall into the prohibition of flattery? Yes.
I just have a question on the Kula. How is it even termed flattery? Oh, he lied to it.
Right. The word chanifa, to be honest, does not translate perfectly into English. It is commonly translated as flattery, but we don't perceive it's not an exact definition, because flattery is when you go tell, we associate flattery with what's probably the least flattery, which is when you go pour it on and you praise a person. You know, you go to a person, a fundraiser would go over to someone and, you know, to solicit a contribution, and the person is not an over-avera. But, you know, maybe I will, you know, his merits, which may not be that great or that outstanding, can be played up. You know, oh, it's incredible, you know, what this fellow does, you know, he comes to shul, you know, and that's so astonishing in our time that, you're flattering the person. That type of flattery is not, we'll get to that at the very end maybe, that type of flattery is the least of the problems. The flattery that we're talking about, that I'd like to touch on, is situations where you're going to a person who is not worthy of it, and by doing it, you may actually be encouraging the person to continue doing what they're doing. And is that acceptable or not? So, the Gemara of Ula will have to put aside. Okay, what about the Gemara of Esav, right? Our parsha, right? Kiros Pneo Kim, right? What are we going to say about that? As far as Esav is concerned. And what are we going to say as far as the idea of going ahead and honoring someone in such a manner that you may be giving chizuk to their ways? So here we find the following. So in the Shari Tshuva, this is source number 6 that we have here on the page, a further point in the same book, Shari Tshuva of Rabbeinu Yonah, one of the Rishonim, that he writes as follows. He writes that sometimes we have a situation that he terms mechaved es harishah miderech shalom. That sometimes it comes up that you need to honor a person who is a rasha midarkei shalom. Midarkei shalom means that just the basic honor. In other words, what are you going to do? You don't agree with this person's ways, but you have to be civil. You know, there's certain situations come up where, you know, maybe to stand up for the person when he comes into the room or whatever it may be. So is that the appropriate thing or not? So Rabbeinu Yonah here takes a very hard line. And he says that just like we find, he says, V'lo yisnaig b'chvodo al derech asher yachshvu b'nei adam, he says, so now, what about a situation where the honor that you're going to give to this person is not honor that will necessarily be perceived as honor of who he is? But let's say you're relying on the fact that everybody understands. In other words, people are not foolish. People aren't stupid. Everybody sees what's going on. And they know why I'm saying this, right? And therefore, it would not lead to a distortion. In other words, what would be in such a scenario? Right? We mentioned before that the danger of flattery is that you encourage the person to do it, and you will distort justice because others are going to look on and say, hey, there's no yashrus in this world. People do the wrong thing and get praised, and praise is heaped upon them. So, says Rabbeinu Yonah, what about a situation? Everybody understands. You're not doing it. This is not an honor where you're giving a ringing endorsement to his actions in general, but rather, you're just doing it. He says, Kiderech Shemechabdim B'nei Odom Esa Ashirim. He says, just like the people would give honor to the wealthy, Miderech Silsul V'Latikvas Toeles, where the goal is just for a specific gain. There's a specific benefit that we have in mind. The fundraiser goes over to this person, and everybody understands, if you're observing this, you understand that the person you're dealing with here, you know, we're not, the reason why he's talking to him so nicely and giving him so much honor is because he's interested in a specific goal. He's trying to solicit a contribution or whatever it may be, or not only with money necessarily, but the services of a person. I'm trying to curry favor with a government official, right? You could have a United States elected, you know, a senator or a congressman. There are many Jews who are in the United States Congress. Very few of them are observant, right? So, but yet we find that you know, they would be called in to different Jewish organizations and be given the honor of giving some keynote address or whatever it may be. And you'll say that, all right, look, everybody understands. It's not this, you know, what they're not being mechabed this person because they're saying he's the role model for Yiddishkeit, but rather because he happens to be a Jewish senator or a Jewish congressman or a Jewish congresswoman or whatever, maybe it's a Jewish congress senator or female as well, whatever, that they're calling in this person specifically for a specific benefit. So says Rabbeinu Yonah, that when it comes to a person who is what he terms a Rasha, he says, this cannot be done. He says, you cannot do that. He says, Va'afkam zos yeshchet va'ashma b'dover azeh. He says, this is inappropriate. Ki imhutar l'chaber ashirim, because he says it may be permissible to give this honor to someone who is wealthy, but that is a person who is doing the right thing. But wo'kein harishoim, but not to a person who is off, not to a person who he terms a Russian. Now we will discuss soon what that entails. But he says that if for a person who is not doing, who's clearly not doing the right thing, you can't give even this honor which is being perceived, that everybody understands. You're not endorsing the person. You're not saying that this is how a person should be an observant Jew. All you're doing is you're saying that this person is who they are, and we're trying to get in with them, and, you know, it's better that, you know, this cabinet member should be honored at our dinner, or should be given to speak in our shul, or so on and so forth, right? So we're doing this because of the fact that we have a certain benefit, says Rabbeinu Yonah, this you cannot do. A very hard line. He says the only thing that you could do in such a situation would be that if there is a fear, pen yazika rasha, v'yigrom hefzid, bizman shiyata rasha takifa, shahato chatsufa, he says that if the only thing you could do in such a situation would be to give such honor, meaning to give honor that will be perceived, that will be perceived by everyone that just for what it is, that it's just a courtesy, it doesn't mean anything, that can only be done in a situation where you fear that if we're not in good with this person, that person could come back to get us, right? So to take the old example of Henry Kissinger, for example, a person, you know, who went off the beaten path clearly, and but yet, you know, was the Jew in the government, you know, in the cabinet. Not that he represented well the interests of the Klal Yisrael, but at that time, for those who would have thought, hey, it's better that we should be in good with him, rather than, you know, who knows what could happen if, you know, he's a very powerful guy. And if we cross him and we don't give him a certain degree of honor that he feels is necessary, so then who knows what could happen. So in that situation, and that situation alone, says Rabbeinu Yonah, that a person could do, but only the honor that is perceived, that it's only given for this reason. It's not exceptional honor, it's courtesy that's commonly extended to people, that you could do, and nothing more. This is what he says. A very, very strict opinion. Now, The question is there any flexibility in this? Is this, in other words, this opens up a lot of questions. So I would just say the following. There is the tshuva, which I mentioned earlier. It's not here on the sheet, but in the Igros Moshe, so Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the question about a situation where there was a member of the community. I think it was it may have been a doctor or something. Some person who was he wasn't a religious fellow, but he helped the Jewish community greatly. And he was married, unfortunately, to a non-Jewish woman, but he identified himself as a Jew, and he, you know, gave a lot. And from time to time, he would cop into shul. And the question was, could they give him an honor? Could they give him an honor in the shul? And this shaila came up, and the rabbi who wrote the shaila to Rav Moshe said on his own, he said, I don't feel comfortable calling him up to an aliyah, but the question is, can we give him to open the aron? Can we give him the psicha to open the aron? You know, which, you know, we'll tell him, you know, it's very great. It is an honor to open up the aron, and that way he'll have his kavod, and that's it. Is this mutter or not? So Rav Moshe writes in the tshuva a very interesting thing. He makes a distinction which I referred to earlier, and he said that there is room to distinguish between praise which falsifies halacha, whereas praise which is just, you're just singling out the person for the good deeds that he does. This is a distinction that we don't find in the Rabbeinu Yonah, but this is what he wanted to say, the following thing. He wanted to say that, you know, for example, the question that we have with Yaakov and Esau, right? So how does Yaakov say to Esau that looking at you is like looking at the divine? So, based on what we've learned, you could attempt to give a number of answers. You could say that, you know, well, maybe it was a sakana, right? And in which case that would seem to bear out that that would follow the view that to avoid a sakana, a person is allowed to flatter. Or perhaps you could say that he was trying to curry favor in his eyes to avoid problems in the future, even if there wasn't a sakana at the moment. But Rav Moshe adds a third ingredient, which is that after everything said and done, there was no great distortion by saying this. Because it wasn't like I'm telling him that, you know, you're a tzaddik. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that when I look at you, you're so beautiful, you have such a radiant countenance, you look like an angel. So that, he says, is a relatively harmless type of praise. And therefore, a relatively harmless type of praise, he claims, and I can't tell you how it reconciles with the Shaarei Teshuva, but he claims that such a thing could be permissible in a case of need. And therefore, he said, he agreed with this rabbi, he said to call the person up to an aliyah, he would not do. He had other reasons why he wouldn't do it either, that a person who does not go by the laws of the Torah should not, that it would be sort of a contradiction that the Torah should be read at this point because he himself doesn't follow them, so it's sort of like a dishonor to the Torah. But the fact is that when it comes to opening the Aron, which in itself is, okay, there's no Isser in you know, it doesn't say anywhere in Shulchan Aruch the exact details of who can open the Aron. So he said, so if it's understood that you're doing this out of recognition for her service to the community, then he said that it could be that if you feel it's necessary, you could do such a thing. If you feel it's necessary, you could do it, because it's not clear. It's not clear what the Isser would be. Again, because of the fact that you're not falsifying the Torah outright. You're not going to a person who just spoke Lashon Hara and say, oh, that was terrific what you just said. There was nothing wrong with that Lashon Hara. Nah, not Lashon Hara at all. Right? That's a distortion of halacha. That's telling somebody who's observing that there's no right and wrong in this world. Somebody, it demoralizes those who try to do the right thing and say, look at this, a guy did a terrible thing and they're all giving him yashikayat for this. Right? So that's the worst form of Chanifa. But in a situation where it's just a case of, you know, okay, listen, in recognition for his service to the community, and really only in recognition of that, it's not an endorsement of who he is or what he represents, but in recognition of his service to the community, we're going to give him this honor, which does not, you're harping on that specific point. It's a recognition of what he has done. It is not a comprehensive endorsement of the person. That Rav Moshe said that in case of great need, he said that one could be lenient. And this, I'm sorry, the question was
good. Yeah. Is it possible to perceive what Yaakov did with Esau as he was actually telling the truth?
Right.
For two reasons. A, they were twins.
Right.
And B, he had just fought with his Tsar, so he...
Okay, all right. I mean, you know, as far as the twins, I don't know if it, you know, the countenance of an angel, I don't think you're born with it. You know, that has to do with the person, what comes with him in life, you know. As far as the other thing, yeah, okay. In other words, it's more of a, you know, the saving grace in Yaakov's case was the fact that there's really no harm done, in the sense that nobody's going to see that and say, hey, I want to be like Esau. Because you're not telling him, you're not giving him a yashikah for what he did. You're not saying, oh, you've been murdering people, hey, you know, I think if that's what you feel, then absolutely, it's a free country, do what you want. Right? He wasn't saying that. So that, Rav Moshe says, and this is, I think, the basic heter that is relied upon commonly, this comes up a lot. We have situations, I say, with public officials and in, you know, in philanthropy, I have this a lot, and different situations where, especially in our times, we have a lot of assimilated Jews and they don't know, and you know, perhaps you may want to go down that road and say the person is a Kinush Nishma, the person never had the benefit of going to a yeshiva and learning what the right thing was. That is debatable whether that would be a heter here. But the fact is that the general idea would be that Rav Moshe's leniency is that it's a recognition for the good that he has done. To give someone an award and say, in recognition for your service to the community, we hereby present you with this award, he said that if you feel the need to do that, that's okay. And it's going to order. Yeah, I'm sorry.
In case without any zeal, does anyone approach this from a Kiruv standpoint?
From Kiruv, it's not, but again, but Kiruv, you have to be careful. Kiruv has to be done the right way. In other words, it's brought in the Sefer Arachas Tzadikim, he brings down that a person can do Chanifa in the interest of being Makar of people to Torah, but you have to be very careful, because if you say the wrong thing, you could distance a person from Torah. Yeah, yes.
Does this also extend when the person isn't around anymore? Does this extend to a hesped?
A hesped is a little different discussion. The exaggeration, there's a discussion amongst the poskim, the famous opinion of the Taz, that's brought in Shulchan Aruch Eredeia, that at a hesped one is allowed to exaggerate a little bit, on the premise that they had the opportunity to do more, maybe they would have done more, they only did what they did because they were confined. But, you know, okay, that's a discussion in the MS. But it's commonly done. There's a different discussion, really. There were those who held you should not do it. But this is the basic hesped. The basic Indian of Hanifa. I would just leave off with one last point, which comes up, which actually it's amusing, if it wouldn't be so mortifying that such a thing would take place. But we have brought here, this is from the writings of Rav Avadia Yosef, that he quotes from the Sefer Chassidim, which was also written by one of the Rishon Rav Yehuda HaChassid, that he says that even when a person is going to give honor to someone else, there are certain honors that are untouchable. And that is honors that are given to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Titles that are given to God cannot be given to people. For example, he says, the Sefer Chassidim says that they wanted to write that to a certain distinguished person. They were going to take the person, let's say the guy's name was Reuven. So they were going to take the pasuk Yehi Chvod Hashem Lo'olam, right? That the glory of Hashem should be forever, and they were going to replace the word Hashem with Reuven. And they were going to present him with a plaque that said Yehi Chvod Reuven Lo'olam. Right, so the Sefer Chassidim, he says that the person should not do, because there's a limit. Even with all good intentions, and even in situations where it could be permissible to flatter somebody, but there's a limit. You can't creep into the area where you're comparing him to God. right? You know, the old Yiddish joke that they say about a person, I don't know if you understand Yiddish, can you appreciate this, that they, someone said to someone else, you know, the black be God, you're just like God. So he said, really? He said, yeah, God is nicht kein Mensch, und du bist nicht kein Mensch. You know? So, all right, that's involved. I cannot translate that into English. It doesn't translate. But, you know, but anyway, the fact is that this would be an inyan of we creep into the areas, and I just want to end on this. He says that he quotes here from the Chidon, incredible thing that they sent in one of the Chidon lived in the eastern countries in the Arab lands, and he writes there that they were trying to curry favor with one of the noblemen of the time, who was apparently familiar, I don't know if he was Jewish, hard to know, or he wasn't Jewish, but he was familiar with Hebrew, and this man was the governor of the region, and they sent to him the title, El Melech Yoshev Al Kisei Rachamim. This is what he writes, that they described this person, the word Kael, we refer to God, the word means power, it doesn't mean God literally, right? In other words, the power, the king who sits on the throne of justice, which is a tefillah that we say in the slichas, right? That we all know this in the right before we say the 13 attributes of Hashem's mercy. Kel Melech Yoshev Al Kisei Rachamim. So they wanted to flatter this person, so they referred to him as the Melech Yoshev Al Kisei Rachamim. So the Chidah says this is absolutely unacceptable. There are limits, even in situations where it's acceptable to do. There's a limit to how far you can go. So that's it. In summary, the inyan of Hanifa is something that the post can take very seriously. To go ahead and justify the actions of someone who's doing something that's wrong is a terrible thing, because it distorts truth and it could mislead other people, and it could strengthen the repetition of this inyan. Bad enough it happened once, it can happen again. There are situations where it may be permissible. In every situation it requires a judgment. One should just realize it, even though in our times we're very loose with praise and talk is very cheap, as I mentioned, talk is cheap is not a Jewish concept. We have to be careful in what we say to people and not cross over the line that sometimes with good intention we could actually be doing something which isn't so right. Thank you very much.